This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Good evening. This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Jen and Cam have asked me to say a few words about Our True Crime Podcast. There's nothing quite like discussing a juicy murder with a friend. True crime buffs are well-versed in shootings, knifings, axings, poisonings, and violent defenestrations. But such matters are not for little ears. Listener discretion is advised.
He's the critic.
He's the comic.
And that's the gimmick. It's the Dare Daniel podcast, where film critic Daniel Barnes and comedian Corky McDonald do your dirty work by watching the worst movies imaginable.
Know of a movie so bad you have to share it? A film with a bad rap you've always been curious about? An underrated bit of cinema you'd love to hear discussed?
Or are you a great big fat person?
Whatever the case, we happily accept your most sadistic or altruistic dares.
Every Tuesday we release a full-length episode of Cinematic Stunt Work.
And every Thursday an action-packed mini-episode featuring previews, general movie discussion, and your movie dares, plus beer.
Available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,
our website daredaniel.com, and anywhere fine podcasts are burnished and proffered.
And make sure to check out our sister pod, Serious Talk Seriously and Graphic Novel Explorers Club, for more quality Sacramento podcasts.
Podcast that dares to ask the question,
what keeps you awake at night?
Maybe it's the media reporting that
sea levels are rising globally.
Does your brain swirl with
fears fueled by horror stories
when you hear that we're having
among the worst flu season in a decade and it hasn't peaked yet?
Because we all know how I feel about that.
Things That Keep Me Up at Night, a brand new podcast for you kindred spirits out there who cope with real life horror with a top-notch sense of humor.
Join us on this journey of education and commiseration as we try to scare the shit out of each other every Friday. From colds to pandemics to government conspiracies, we get elbow deep in the gritty stuff, laughing all the way down the rabbit hole.
You can join the madness by tuning in anywhere you find podcasts and get updates on the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at TTKMeUp. You can also visit our website for future surprises and contact info at ttkmeup.com.
But just a disclaimer.
I don't want to be blamed if you cannot get to sleep tonight.
I'm
great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Today's second episode in one day.
Yeah. Woohoo.
Yep. All right. You ready for the case?
Yeah, let go.
All right. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've talked about something that really bothers me is trying to figure out the minds of these people and why they do what they do. It kills me.
Sometimes you just can't.
I know, but I don't like that.
I mean, I can't figure out why people still write checks in line at the supermarket. So if you can't figure that out, we can't.
Yeah, well, I think mine's a little bit more, a little bit different than
well,
that.
But yeah. I mean, if we can't figure out something that simple,
well,
how would we figure out?
Those are older folks, though. You know what I mean? That, whatever. So anyway, this case, I know this guy. It's an older thing. And it's always kind of stayed with me because it brings up what happens. Like, when is that line crossed? When do things change? Are you born evil? Do you become evil? Does evilness even exist? I don't know. Anyway, here we go. You ready?
Gotcha.
September 30th, 2005, Pampa, Texas. So the sheriff department receives a 911 call from the scared little girl.
911, what is your emergency?
Ma'am, there is a shootout for help. I don't know. She's alive in my house.
What's your name?
Robin Jones, my parents are Conrad and Brian Conrad. My mom is pregnant and my brother is in high school.
Okay, I want you to stay on the
found. Please, can you just send somebody out here? Somebody's coming.
So authorities, of course, quickly, desperately respond to this little girl's house. Okay.
Right.
It ended up being a farmhouse kind of in the middle of nowhere. Ugh. Now, they have no idea what awaits for them on the inside. Upon arriving at the scene, they find the 10-year-old little girl, and her name's Robin. One deputy stays with Robin and kind of comforts her. So the other deputies storm the house and they look for signs of life or anything going on in there, including the killer. Inside, they locate Robin's mother, older brother, and stepfather, all dead from massive gunshots. Robin is the only survivor at age 10.
Oh, Lordy. Nobody should have to go through that.
The killer, who decided that he would brutally and maliciously take this young girl's family away, was 23-year-old Levi King. King is the typical psychopath. And I don't mean this weird, but he's like attractive. Like, that bothered me. I don't know why, but I think all psychopaths need to be homely. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean? Like,
wear a sign that says, yes, I'm a psychopath.
And he doesn't. That's the whole scary part. Anyway, he doesn't look odd or act bizarre when he's around. You know, he fits in, which is the typical psychopath. He relates well to others. He's not that monster that you think of when you think psychopath. You know, the monster hunched over in the corner. He is very well spoken. He's kind of cute.
Right.
And, you know, he's not scary looking.
And how old was he?
23.
Yeah, he's not your normal, like we said in the last episode with Stranger Danger. It's not your normal, the weirdo that drives by your house.
Right?
It's your everyday looking.
Right. But I think it's the fact that this guy, and any psychopath for that matter, fundamental deficit is that they lack that human connectedness.
Right.
They can't connect with people, and that shows. And so we're going to talk about his story.
Well, they don't have any emotion, right? They only care about themselves.
And it's not even, it's almost not like that either with him. He's just, I don't know. It just bugs me. Just bugs me. Anyway, here we go. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
So Levi King's story begins in Pineville, Missouri.
Oh, wow.
Right? So he's from our area. And I kind of knew that, but I forgot. Now, the population of Pineville is tiny. It's around 800.
Teeny tiny.
Right? So he was raised with his 6 brothers and sisters. But as with most true psychopaths, the signs start to show up early.
Right.
And with Levi, it was no different. Okay. At just 4 years old, Levi got upset with his sister and he was like combing through her room trying to look for something to hurt her, and he couldn't find anything. So he just went ahead and set the curtains on fire.
No way.
So he set the whole room on fire. This is age 4. That's tiny.
That's really tiny.
So as Levi grew up, the problems obviously only escalated. And let me just say before we kind of get into this, not only did he kill people, he harmed animals. So King says that he started smoking around age 10 or 11.
Marijuana or just cigarettes?
I think it's cigarettes. He didn't specify. Drinking around age 11 and popping pills at age 13 or 14.
Wow.
And you know, the brain is still developing.
Well, it stops then.
But that's when to take that all in. So here's the animal abuse. FYI, you might want to turn it off. During his teen years, this is when he started to learn how to kill, and he realized how much he liked it. This included family pets. He tells a story about an incident where he went into his father's room, took out a SKS out of his father's gun cabinet, took their family pet, the cat, outside, and started firing shots until there was nothing left.
I can't hear you. I'm not even listening.
But this is important because it lays the foundation.
I know.
At age 20, Levi King went to a neighbor's house, burglarized it, and then set it ablaze, burning it totally to the ground.
Are you kidding?
He was sentenced, now check this out, 14 years in prison.
What age?
20. He was 20 years old. But 20 plus 14
is 34.
Is not the age at which he committed these crimes.
So something happened with the legal system.
Mm-hmm. We can tell that him lighting fires, killing animals,
arson,
all of that is signs of, you know,
isn't that what the
serial killer? It's the triad of the three. So he was sentenced, like I said, to 14 years, served 17 months.
You're kidding me.
17 months in prison before being paroled and sent to a halfway house in St. Louis. It was mid-September 2005. He flees. Besides, he doesn't want to be there anymore. He said he grew tired of living in the house and he picked up his paycheck and he was gone. So now, remind you, he has like one paycheck from doing not very well paying job.
Right.
Living at a halfway house. So now he's a fugitive from the halfway house, and part of his probation and all that was to do that. He didn't know where to go. And he doesn't have much money. He decides to hitchhike back home to his family home in Pineville, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he would not be very welcome at his home and that his father, Scott King, would not be too delighted to see him. Okay. they had been fighting pretty much since his teen years.
Right.
Pretty badly, I guess, fighting.
And it was probably more than the normal father-son fights.
Yes. But I don't like this guy. And I'm going to tell you why.
You don't like the dad either?
No, I don't. I have problems. Anyway.
Well, yeah, you do have problems.
No, I mean about this.
Okay.
Pretty much right when he had hitchhiked home and made it home, they get into a huge argument and the father kicks him out. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Levi King was furious. All this anger and hatred was just building up and it was about to explode. You go back and I said I didn't like this. King said he felt like he was always rejected by his father. Okay. And in the end, he blamed all of this on his father, the relationship or the lack of relationship that they had.
So he blamed all his
behavioral
problems on his dad.
Yeah. And we'll get into that in a minute. So it was the morning of September 29th, 2005. Levi King, still angry at his dad, sneaks back inside the house at around 9:05 in the morning after his father had departed for work. He was still angry. He was very mad. All that was just about to explode on the top. And I guess, you know, you think about normal people. Well, like you.
Average folks.
And you have that anger and you work through it, right? But people with his background and his psychopathic tendencies, you know, this is not going to end well, right?
Right.
So he gets in the house. He starts ripping the house apart, vandalizing it, tearing up stuff. He's looking for anything that he could take and steal and maybe sell. But he also takes an AK-47.
Oh, good.
A hunting rifle and a 9mm handgun. And then he takes off.
Because people like him need
weapons.
Mm-hmm.
King leaves his residence from his father's house and he walks down the road and he realizes that he is going to need some more stuff if he's going to try to get by.
Right.
So he lays in wait. He kind of hides out some bushes and he's watching this house. From the house, a man and a woman emerge. They get into their truck and they drive away.
Now, is it a house close to his family?
Yes.
Home?
It's just like right down the street.
Oh,
not that far away. It's here that he sees an opportunity. Assuming that nobody's in the house, he goes ahead, breaks in the house, and now he's going to try to steal whatever he can. But mostly he knows that he needs a car.
Right.
He needs a key to a car because he needs to get out of there. The rage at this time is really building up. It's like out of control with him.
Plus the adrenaline. He has to have that adrenaline going.
Fast forward. A few hours later, a phone call comes into the Pineville police. They report that two people had just returned out from shopping and were savagely gunned down inside their home. The victims, whose hands still clutched the food that they were grocery shopping for, were 70-year-old Orly McCool and his 47-year-old daughter-in-law, Dawn McCool.
McCool. That's kind of a McCool name.
Right? That's what I said, too.
Yeah.
I kept thinking
it almost sounds fake.
I know,
but
McCool. It's cool. I like
that's my new name. Jen McCool.
Jen McDorp.
That works, too.
I'm going to unfold this for you. So Orly was found. I like the name Orly, too. That's old. I think I had an uncle named Orly. Orly was found right at the door entrance. Apparently.
He was ambushed.
Levi King was inside waiting for him. So the minute Orly entered the door, he was shot once. Now, Dawn had went in first, and he let Dawn go past.
Because a woman.
Mm. And you kind of see the gunshot wounds with the woman here. It kind of plays a role here. So Orly was shot once, okay? Mm-hmm. Dawn was found in the living room, but was shot several times. The grocery receipt proved that the couple had not been dead for long when the authorities found them, and they could give an approximate time based on the time stamped receipt. She'd made it all the way to the stairs when she heard Orly was shot, or she heard a gunshot, I guess. And Levi states that he couldn't see her. He could only see her leg. So he hit her leg first, take her out. She dropped. And then he went over and shot her several more times. I know.
We're going to have to talk to Kate from Ignorance Was Bliss.
So I said this one a bit of good case because this is all mental. Like he really did just snap.
Well, and why are these mostly women haters?
But he really hated his dad. That's
no,
the thing.
I know. I just
and his mother is never brought up in the story. I don't even know what happened to his mom.
Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe she left and she's
but his
angry.
Dad is very
at
abusive. He's an a-hole. Okay.
But maybe he was mad at his mother for leaving him to deal with his father. I don't know.
Oh,
but
man,
that's a good thing. We'll have to talk to Kate about that.
So a break comes in almost immediately. Now, the break came in, obviously, because dad, Scott King, comes home and notices the guns are on, and that's all reported. So the police had just finished up a call in which a man reported several weapons were stolen from his house. Now, it was Scott King who reported this robbery, and the 9mm gun that was stolen from his house was what was used to kill Orly and Dawn McCool. So they knew immediately Levi King had killed Orly and Dawn.
Did the dad know that the son had broken into the house?
Yeah, because he kicked him out. He just assumed it.
So when he called the police, he said,
I
believe my son.
Remember? It's itty bitty.
Right.
Who's going to do it?
I know.
And it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, too. So in the McCool house, it soon became obvious that there were no valuables missing or even money gone. So this crime,
senseless.
Exactly. It was simply an execution.
He didn't even steal a car?
Hold on.
Okay. Sorry.
So police were stumped because what could be the motive for this? You know, who could do this? Who could commit such a heinous act for no reason, right? Mm-hmm. But soon they figured out there was no logical motive, such as a theft. You know, this was psychological. It was mm-hmm. a psychological motive because Levi's not right. This was a spree kill. It was an act that was committed just because it could be done.
Oh my gosh. Talk about your children disappointing you.
So why did he do it? Levi King states that as he watched the McCools depart, he knew that he was going to break in their house with the idea of getting keys and stealing the vehicle because he needed to get away from the area. Unable to locate the keys because, oh, I don't know, they had them. They were driving, right? He just didn't feel like leaving, he says. This is what I'm telling you, like to hear his interview, it's chilling because of statements like this. I just didn't feel like leaving. Here's how this unfolded. The McCools pull up in their truck. And King's inside waiting for them. King says that he knew at that point, he knew what he was going to do. He hid inside as he watched first Dawn enter the house. Orly steps in. King is hiding in the shadows and he shoots Orly once in the left temple. And Orly immediately drops. Dawn, frozen from the sound, stops at the bottom of the stairs. King takes a shot and hits her in her hip. She immediately drops to the ground. He then unleashes several shots on Dawn.
Could you imagine?
King then takes the keys to the McCool's pickup truck. Levi enters the truck and said at the time, he just sat there. He sat there for several minutes. Perhaps thinking about what he'd done or what he was going to do next. It's not really clear. It is after this little break that he says something changed in him. Something shifted. He said it was as if the world stopped and it was the closest thing that he'd ever known to true peace. He claims the anger, the fear, the loneliness, all those feelings he had been experiencing since childhood just evaporated. Levi King felt relief. He stated it was a euphoric feeling and it lasted about 5 hours. He liked killing them. He got that. And so he never
got the rush,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Levi King claims that his rough upbringing was a result of all of this. This is what had happened. So he explains that their house was out in the middle of nowhere. And it was isolated from everybody else. And the father kind of liked it that way. Now, mm-hmm. there were six of them. Remember, he had six siblings. It had no plumbing, no sewage, no electricity, no running water.
And this was when?
This was not that long ago. 2005?
Lord.
He's not that old. He's only...
No, I know. But I'm just saying, that's very strange to not have any of that nowadays.
Ammunition shells lined the yard. Mm. So does that tell you anything? Here's another animal problem, but this, again, you know. Okay. From a young age, all the King children were taught to shoot, and the sound of gunfire would often ring out at all times of the night. Police were even scared to go there. The neighbors would call police, and they were scared.
Because they wanted to shoot, but it was at a clubhouse.
Yeah, but it's also in the middle of the day, not the middle of the night, whatever. All the children, all the siblings claimed that they lived in fear of their father. Scott King had a volatile nature. He was intense, unpredictable. He also beat the children in front of the other children.
I'm kind of not surprised by that.
Savagely. But... like he would beat them savagely in front of each other. Now, and you know, siblings kind of stick up for each other. That had to be horrible. But couldn't step in because then they'd get it, you know?
Right. You would think with six of them, they must have been really scared of him.
He's a jerk.
Well, he's more than a jerk.
I know. I'm trying to be nice. I hate when people...
You don't have to be nice to people like that.
Okay. So here's the animal abuse again, like I said. But I'm just warning you because I don't want people to freak out. So Levi claimed that it was his father. And this is an interesting point, right? Levi claimed that it was his father who taught him how to kill and torture the animals that often the other kids, his siblings, would bring home as pets.
Oh.
So this, you know, this just kind of got me thinking. Levi had stated that his dad did this with him and only him, not the other children. Like the dad would have Levi kill the other pets, but not have the other kids kill pets. Do you see what I'm saying?
So his dad must have saw something.
So that makes me think like he saw the darkness in him that maybe he possessed. I don't know. It just, you know, and parents, sometimes you see that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, your kids pretty well, you know, and you can kind of see some stuff maybe. So Levi tells a story about being very, very young, not even really remembering how old he was. His father dragged him out into the woods with a gun and a box of puppies.
Oh, no.
His father forced him to shoot up the box. King said, well, and this is like, so this is at the point he had to be pretty young, right? So Levi King, we're done now. Levi
Shiny
King, Okay, back to me. So Levi King says that he was so disgusted after this, which was the first time that he was made to kill an animal, that he couldn't even stand to sit next to his dad. He hopped out of the car and ran all the way home, which was a couple miles. He couldn't be in the car with his dad. But his dad made him do that.
What? And that was after the first time
he... That was the very first time he remembers killing animals. He doesn't quite remember how old he was, but he was little.
But he hated it then.
He said he felt so disgusted by it, right?
Okay. I would think disgusted would be...
That you wouldn't do it again.
Right.
I don't know, though. You know, I think back about kids and trying to please parents, and like, if your father's like, you're a real man, real men do this, and you're a little kid, you know? I think a lot of that goes to that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the adult figure that will beat the snot out of you.
And maybe he felt that if...
Or trying to seek his love.
He was the special one that his dad chose him to go just do like molesters things.
Always tell the children grooming. That you're special. Levi King states his hatred for his father just grew and grew and grew. And even
is mine.
And
now.
Even though he thought about killing his father, this is heartbreaking. He didn't because he didn't want his younger brothers to grow up without a dad.
Oh.
Even though he beat the crap out of them.
No dad is better than that dad.
So King says that after killing the McCools, which was a direct response to all the hatred and all the anger he had. It was almost like a displaced killing of his dad. He likened it in an interview saying that it was almost like he was pretending that they were his dad.
Mm.
And maybe that would account for him feeling so
euphoric. Yeah, like he imagined that they were his dad. Kind of.
That he said it was the whatever.
They were surrogates.
Mm. So the police are now well aware that Levi King has the McCool truck. They know that he killed the McCools. They know he stole the truck.
They know he's got his dad's guns.
Mm-hmm. But King did not know where to go, but he knew he had to get out of there. So he says he just started driving and he started heading southwest, having no idea where he's going to go. So it's around 3:48 a.m. and Levi King is driving through Texas in the Texas Panhandle. And he had been driving for more than 13 hours. He says he pulled over and tried to rest, but he couldn't even calm himself down. Right. He couldn't calm himself down after all this. So he decides to get back on the road. He says at this point, the euphoria that he had felt from killing the McCools was now dissipating. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the hunger for it to return, chasing the dragon to get that hit again, to get that high again, was starting to come back in. You know, it's not going to be good. So as he's driving, he passed his farmhouse and he knew right then and there what he was going to do. He took the truck, flipped it around. And he went back.
Now, did he have any other reason but to kill, to go back to?
Nope.
No.
This is 13 hours away from his house. He wanted that feeling again. He wanted that euphoria. 4:16 a.m., Levi King was ready. He was going to do it. He wanted that emotional release. He wanted that euphoria. He quietly flipped that car around, drove up to the farmhouse. He grabbed the AK-47, got out of the truck, and snuck around to the back door. He kicked in the door.
Mm.
Upon entering the house, he noticed a bedroom right off to the side. There, sleeping, were Brian and Michelle Conrad. Michelle woke up first. King took the gun, aimed it at her, and opened fire.
Mm.
Several rounds later, he turned the machine onto Brian and continued firing. After Brian and Michelle, he continued through the house. Robin, the little girl that's 10, her bedroom was next. She heard him coming. She jumped up and hid behind the door, her bedroom door, at first. Then she heard the heavy walking of his feet and she got scared. So she decided to run back, jump in bed and kind of hide, play asleep. The door flung open and a blast rang out. He shot twice. Robin froze in her bed. He didn't turn on the light or check to see that he was successful in hitting her. But he thought to himself, this is a tiny kid. That's not going to be a problem. So he left. Thank God, really.
Ugh.
He left a room and he went further down the hall. He opened the other bedroom door, but this time he turned the light on, opened fire, killing young Brad. Brad was in high school. After the massacre, thinking he killed all four people, he went into the living room, turned on the lights, just take a look around the house. He said he wanted to look at the photos that were hung on the wall.
Oh, no.
To see what kind of people he had just killed, get an idea of how they lived. So while all this was taking place, Robin was playing dead in her bed. Not moving, as she listened to King going through the house. Both of his shots missed her, but he doesn't know that. So as King was getting ready...
My heart aches for her.
Right? So as King was getting ready to leave, he states that he looked into the mirror that was hanging on the wall, and it was here that he realized, unlike the first set of murders that gave him such that feeling, that relief, the euphoria, this was totally opposite. He said he felt empty, nothing. He was dead inside. He said he was trying to capture it. He wanted that back, but it wasn't. This was way different than the first set of killings he did.
Wow. Did he say why?
Nope.
Do you think it was because he could see that the family? I don't know. That it was like he destroyed a happy family?
The drug. I think it's like that first time you do it, it's so unlike anything else you've ever felt. So little Robin tried as best as she could to lie still and not move, but she was kind of struggling with her body at this time. It was, she was laying there for hours, not moving. She finally fell asleep for a little bit because of the stress. The minute she woke up, she listened to see if she could hear anything. She listened to see if he was still in the house, and she realized he wasn't. So she got up and she went straight to the phone and called police. Police arrived and rushed to the little girl. Trooper Chad Brooks grabbed Robin and put her into his car. And this is heartbreaking to hear this description. The officer, and this is how young she is, you know, and you get that. The officer asked Robin what she wanted him to do for her. Robin, you know, and I guess in the stress and the everything, I don't know. She said it was her chore to feed the animals on the farm, and she needed to do that first and foremost. So this, like, gives me chills. So the officer said, of course, and he went out with her, and they fed animals. Isn't that sad? That's going to make me cry. I swear to God. So the other officers entered the house, and they were met with this horrible, grisly death scene. The father was shot 3 times, while the mother was shot 6. The son was shot 3 times, and he even shot the dog 2 times.
Of course he did. I mean, that's...
That's nothing. Ugh. So they were baffled at the scene and why anyone would want to hurt this all-American family. Remember, this was in Texas and not Missouri, so they hadn't connected the two crimes yet. And why would you? You wouldn't have any idea to do that. So at this time, after he left their house, King picked up a map and he decided that he couldn't stay in America anymore. So he decided to go to Mexico. So he entered Juarez, Mexico, and he was driving and he became a bit lost. So he exited the freeway. I don't know. In a way, I think he did it on purpose. So he gets back on the freeway and he starts going the wrong way. He's going north instead of south, which is going
to
take him back to the checkpoint, right at the border. So the agents asked, you know, what do you have in your car? Anything you need to claim? So Levi King, he just was like, yeah, I have guns in the car. So then he was asked to get out, and that was it. Not a blaze of glory. Kind of think he did that on purpose. I think he was just like, I'm not stupid. I know I can't get away from this.
Can't live in Mexico forever.
Yeah, just can't. So King was taken in and transferred to Pineville for the McCool murders. And while the Pampa murder investigation is at a standstill at this point, because again, they don't realize this, authorities were thinking that the triple murder would go unsolved. But soon, of course, they get a break. In custody, there's a deputy that kind of befriends King and starts talking to him to get information. Mm-hmm. So Levi King says, you know, there are 4 more out there that I got. He didn't realize that Robin was alive. The police at first are like, four more?
Who
like,
the hell?
What?
Yeah.
They had to do a little, you know, research on that and figure it out. King went ahead and described the Texas town, mentioning that there was a giant white cross. Well, then police figured out that it was
the same murder.
Yes, it was that murder scene. So Missouri, King pleads guilty to the murders of Orly and Dawn McCool. But in the state of Texas, as we know, Texas and Florida, things are a little different. They wanted the death penalty. The prosecutor was adamant that somebody cannot kill 5 people ruthlessly without cause. Not like there's ever cause. They wanted the death penalty and they wanted to fight for it. Prosecutor of Texas said that they were going to force Levi King to pay. Now, this is where 14-year-old Robin comes in. She's now 14.
Right.
It's 4 years later. Robin decides to take the stand and testify with the monster in the room who took her family. Robin says that Levi King looked at her and it was as if he could burn a hole right through her. He just stared at her. There wasn't guilt. There wasn't sadness. There wasn't anger. It was just invisible. He just, I don't know, standing in line at McDonald's. You know what I mean? Like nothing was there. King pled guilty to these murders as well. And then it was up to the jury in the state of Texas to decide if he would in fact get the death penalty.
Hang him high.
You think he gets the death penalty?
I don't know.
After 7 hours of deliberation, the Texas jury returns with a decision. Levi King was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Why? Did they say why?
They just
chose they were
it
going
that
after
way.
The death penalty?
Nope.
I'm kind of surprised.
That's Texas. I was like, oh, that's Texas, right? Mm-hmm. Texas and Florida. To leave all this off, check him out, look it up. But talk about your chills. When Levi King was asked if he felt any guilt, do you feel any remorse? Do you feel badly at all? He simply said, no. I can honestly say that even during the trial, I really didn't care about anybody else that I hurt. And of course, certainly before the trial, and I still don't.
You're
So I said he's a true psychopath. Like
he is. I mean, even Dale Merle Nelson.
That's why I think this is a little unusual, and it bothers me because he's so blatantly, I guess, honest. You know, one of the tricks of psychopaths is that they feign emotion. They learn to fake it, fake it till you make it. And he's just kind of like, no. And that's kind of explaining how he looked at Robin up there on the stand. I imagine that there was no look. There was just deadness in his eyes.
Unreal.
So it takes me back to the evil. If you're born evil, if you become evil, and why I put on Twitter last night, because this really did bother me. It's bothered me since I knew the case. That's why I chose it. And I knew about it, and I could, you know, dart it out pretty quick script wise. But that, you know, he had all those siblings. They're fine. They're not mass murderers. They're not spree killers. They're not serial killers. And he is. So what's the difference? Then I started thinking about
genetics
and parents.
Grooming.
I'm sure you probably read it. A child called It, which that poor child was savagely abused by his mother and was the only one. The other ones were fine. She didn't bother them. She didn't hurt them. They led normal childhoods. But yet that just bugs me. Like, why did he take Levi out and make him shoot animals? Did he see that he was maybe weak? Was he a pleaser? Was he the kind of kid that wants to please? You know, they always say that molesters look for the child that's missing something that they know that they can slide in that place and take that role.
Well, maybe since the dad saw him burn his sister's room down at 4, maybe he knew that there was something dark inside of him, like himself.
Yeah.
Like the father was dark and he knew. So that's why he chose the boy, to have more in common, or a little shaver, chip off the old block kind of kid. Because it didn't sound like he had any favorites whatsoever.
It was a jerk. I don't know. It just bothers me. I think there's a lot of people in the world with psychopathic tendencies, but to be a true psychopath is,
I'm more of an empath. Things bother me. Other people's problems bother me more. And he didn't even try to pretend to be normal.
That's why I think he purposely came back to the States. He knew that I think he was just like, I did it. And it's just like, there's no.
And you don't think that was an act. You don't think he's just like, I'm too cool. Earl's too cool for me kind of guy,
cool for me. No, I think, he's a true psychopath.
Yeah, I'll have to look more into him.
I mean, how many kids have a bad upbringing and they turn out just fine? But see, then I think that all goes to what's inside of you, too. You know what I mean? Like, I think
it's loose wires.
Well, and how many siblings do you know that are raised by the same parent? And they're like night and day.
Well, my kids are night and day, but they both wouldn't.
But they have some things that are the same, you know?
Like I said, it would have been a good case for Kate. We'll have to pick up something else.
That's what I said yesterday. It's all
well, so psycho. Did I do too.
No. You said for your case.
I said for both of our cases.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's fine. I mean, hey, there's plenty of psychos to go around, let me tell you.
I know. We'll have to pick one out. And
psychos to go around. I know. Anyway, that's all I got for you, Jen.
Wow, Camille. That's awesome. Well,
it's not awesome. It's terrible. I know what you mean. It's
horrible.
I know.
But no, I hadn't. Now I'm curious. You're going to post all the links and stuff and pictures on our blog?
Yeah.
Which is at www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Very interesting.
This stuff keeps me up at night. I'm not kidding.
All right. You want to take us out?
Thanks, buddy. Where can they find us? They can find us at www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. They can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. They can catch us on Twitter. Jen is ourtruecrimepod at Twitter. Mine, I have no idea. Just follow it. I
don't know. OTC.
Yeah, you know me.
OTCP Cam, I believe, is yours.
I don't know. Here, let me look.
Or OTCP with Cam.
It's at OTCP with Cam.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it. That's all I got.
So, we're on all your podcatchers, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify even. You can also stream our episodes on YouTube and also on our blog, which is www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Subscribe to us if you like us. And if you want to leave a nice...
You don't have to leave a nice note if you don't want to. It's fine. But preferably, just don't leave one at all then.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
If you want to give us one star, just give us one star.
This podcasting gig is a lot harder than it looks. And this, you know, I work full time.
People are mean.
I have kids. I took hours out of the day yesterday to write this little shindig up and research it. today's my kid's birthday and I'm over here doing this so that we have an episode to go Wednesday, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's my point. Thank you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being our biggest supporters when nobody else would.
We love you all. Really, we do. We joke, but we do love you. And we'd love to talk to you on Twitter. I do. It totally makes my day. And so give us a shout out on Twitter and I will reply. DM us if you want.
Okay.
So anyway.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Camille. I enjoyed as much as I can enjoy a psychopathic
murders.
Mass spree killer. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But, all right, buddy. So remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Love ya.
A bookalo, bookalo, bookalo.
Then we went to the bookhouse, which was always fantastic. It's my favorite used bookstore in the city.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they should support us. The bookhouse, located in Maplewood, Missouri.
They're awesome. We ate at Gus's Fried Chicken.
Eat at Gus's Fried Chicken. Anyway, Jen.
What do you have for us today, Camille?
Did you have anything else you want to talk about?
We can talk anything.
Nope.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
Let's talk about... You know I'm sensitive about my singing, boy.
I know. No, I think you sing fantastic.
No, you don't. And it's
I do. No, my father-in-law used to say this. Everybody can sing. Some just sing better than others. And just like all the birds in the forest, everybody has a different voice. And if only the birds that had the pretty songs were the only ones that sing.
Thanks, Jen. Now I'm ugly and fat. I'm an ugly bird.
You're not an ugly bird.
You just said all the pretty birds.
All the pretty voice birds. Forget it. Would be the ones. I don't remember.
Something like that. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Thanks, but if only the ones that had pretty voices could sing, it would be very quiet because not everybody has. Whatever. I fucked that up. Hi, bloopers. Blooper reel.
Yeah, you're cute. Your life's a blooper reel.
It is a blooper. Oh, you know what else we need to talk about?
What?
The True Crime Podcasters Festival in 2019. It's going to be in Chicago.
In June. No, July.
In July.
I hope people come see us. What if we're sitting there? What if I've had too much trauma in life to sit there by myself and people don't come talk to us?
Well, if that happens, you know what we'll do? We will just pretend that we're everybody else. We don't know who they are. I guess they didn't show. No, we could just say, I don't know who our True Crime Podcast are. I don't know those guys.
Yeah, we're just sitting here. We're waiting for some friends that are over there visiting with Sword and Scale or True Crime Garage. Yeah,
they'll be there. We've got other podcasters that we can talk with.
I know, I'm just kidding.
But maybe our next thing we could do like a little shout out for that.
I'm loud. I'm trying to be a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to speak more clearly.
I'm trying to also,
and much more slowly.
It's
in life. I'm fast. I go fast. I talk fast.
You're easy.
I didn't say that. You did. You want to go there? You want to go there, girl?
Sure. Easy like Sunday morning.
It's 107.
It's 107. Do you know where your children are?
KLPL. Thanks for listening.
KHTR. FM 102.
The Fox. I just made that up.
I'm unplugged.
No. Now you're there. What happened? You got to jiggle that because it's going to go out or something.
Just a little bit. Let me see you win. Too many holes to fill, Camille.
That's what he said. That's what I was going to say. Oh, you little cutie pie. Come on. Do you want to shut the door? Should we shut the door? What do you think? Jennifer? I swear to God, and you're still recording. Unbelievable.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Jennifer!
I am wrapped up in all these fucking cords. Oh my God. You're the one that wanted the damn dog out.
I didn't want the door shut, not the dog out. The door shut. I don't even like you.
Okay, we got bloopers now.
How many minutes are we in right now? It gets 30 minutes long. We haven't even done anything yet.
18.
All right. Okay, you ready?
Come on, Pupilla.
I'm not even feeling it now. I'm not even feeling my story after all that debacle.
You're just feeling yourself.
All right. How can I look at you when you're and people can't see what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how am I supposed to respond to that?
I don't know.
I can't sleep with my animals because they drive me nuts.
Oh, I sleep with a bunch of animals. You've met my husband. You told me to answer Glenn.
I forget it. Ready? Just listen. Okay. Do you know this case at all? The story?
No.
This guy?
No, but let me... I'll listen after I do Glenn.
Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Go.
No, I'm waiting until you do Glenn.
Only Dick Vane was around.
What's that even mean?
I don't know.